Well, some weather rose here. Property and crop insurers are bracing for more than $30 billion in claims. Wheat, rice, oilseed, and other field crop claims alone will likely exceed $6 billion, while claims for damaged buildings and other property, they think, will top $25 billion. Major earth changes. Up next, Whitley Strieber, noted author, joins us as we talk about his work and also earth changes and UFO activity in Coast to Coast AM land in just a moment. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie, New York Times bestselling author Whitley Strieber. He has written so many great books, I can't remember them all, including Communion Superstorm that he wrote with Art Bell, inspired, of course, the film about sudden climate change the day after tomorrow. And here he is back on Coast to Coast AM. You, not only are you a regular, Whitley, you are a loved follower here. You know that?
Oh, well, great.
That's good to know. How have you been? How's Ann? What's new?
Well, fine. We're working hard. Ann has been working on doing interviews with Close Encounter witnesses, contactees, which is she publishes one on our website about every one or two a month, and it's becoming a really remarkable record of these people and their experiences, unlike anything that's ever been done before, because instead of trying to get them to say things that she believes, she just lets them say what they think happened to them. And it's fascinating. The most recent one that was up this weekend is a guy who was in a situation where he was being having a cancer surgery.
Jeez.
And there were two sites in his body, one of which could not be operated on, and the other could be. So they were going to operate on one part, and they were going to try, radiation therapy, I think he said, on the other part. But it wasn't a good situation. He's in these areas, the holding area for people going into various operating rooms, and grays show up in the broad daylight with other people there, none of whom see them. And he sees them bend over him and start working on him. The next thing he knows, he's rolled off into surgery, put under anesthesia. He wakes up, and the doctors say, well, we have good news and extraordinary news. The good news is the part of the tumor that we were able to remove, we got out. This most extraordinary news is the rest of it is gone. And, you know, and he tells this story, and it's just one of millions upon millions of stories ranging from the scariest things I have ever heard to the most extraordinary experiences human beings have ever known.
How does she find these people?
They come to her.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, they come to her. Here's the person who has read so many thousands of these letters, and, you know, people know that she will let them talk and tell their story.
Well, when we had our event in Vancouver in the British Columbia a couple of years ago, Anne was on stage with you and,
yes,
and talked about some of these cases that she had been looking at that point. How did she get interested in this, that part of it?
Well, the way she got interested in it is this. After when we published Communion, we put our address for our mail center in the back of the book, because at the time we knew Bud Hopkins, who recently passed mm-hmm. away, and we were meeting with people who had other people he knew who had close encounter witnesses. He had a little group, and he and I were talking together, and he said, well, there's probably a couple of hundred people in the United States who've had this happen. And so I figured, well, I'll put my address in, and maybe a few more people will turn up. What I didn't expect was what happened. Ultimately, over the next 10 years, we probably got 500,000 letters.
My God.
I mean, they were, the post office was bringing mail trucks.
Stacks and stacks.
Bags and bags of mail into that apartment.
This reminds me of the movie Miracle on, 34th Street,
yeah,
with all the bags of letters to Santa.
And Anne is an amazingly I mean, amongst other things, she's very fast. She's got very fast reflexes, and she reads fast. She does everything fast. She and her secretary read these letters. She didn't read them all, but they read them. You know, the ones that had more full and complete accounts, they read and transcribed. And we still own the transcriptions. We've got them in a storage in Texas. But she has this extraordinary memory. I've never known anyone with a memory like this. And probably remembers the details of 50,000 letters would be my guess. Not only that, she also remembers every story that's ever appeared on our website. She's amazing.
That is something.
Yeah, so that's where it came from.
You know, the story that I had right before you came on, Whitley, about property and crop insurers bracing for, and this is a story that is widely going unreported.
Unreported, but it shouldn't be.
No, $30 billion in claims coming up, and we're not even through the hurricane season yet.
But here's what nobody knows. But it's going to be very important to us in the grocery store soon. And that is that the Chinese corn crop failed.
Uh-oh.
And they bought a very substantial portion of the American corn crop before it was even in the ground.
At premium prices, no doubt.
No. They got good prices because it was so early in the season. And what nobody realized then was, we were going to have a summer that was real hard on our crops in different parts of the country in different ways. Flooding here, heat in the wrong places at the wrong time there. And the result is the United States corn crop, while certainly it hasn't failed, is nowhere near as strong as it is normally. So in the fall, our wheat prices are going to drop. Our corn prices, are going to go up way high. Along with them, prices of pork and prices of beef, because these animals are fed corn.
That's right.
Meanwhile, in China, pork prices have gone up 60% since April. And, you know, this is a country where their primary meat is pork. And so, you know, it's a very rough situation. It's not as serious as last summer when the Russian and Ukrainian wheat crops failed so badly, they stopped exports. And the result of this was people in the Mideast saw their wheat prices. And wheat is the primary staple in the Middle East. This is their primary food.
That's one of the reasons that we had the Arab Spring.
That's right. And finally, I've been saying this ever since it happened. I was saying these people are hungry. They see their leaders and the dictators living like kings, and it's the same thing that happened during the French Revolution.
That's right.
The aristocrats continue to live the way they've always lived, and the people are hungry and they get mad.
Totally out of touch with their population.
Absolutely. But in any case, this kind of disruptive weather is part of a continuing pattern. And we haven't had as intense summer heat this summer in the world as we did in summer of 2010, which was a remarkable summer, and hopefully not one that we're going to
repeat, huh?
Well, we got up to 128 degrees Fahrenheit in Pakistan at one point, fortunately for not very long, because much above 132, and the human body's heat exchange mechanism doesn't work anymore. It's not designed.
No, you start shutting down.
People start shutting down, even young, healthy people. But it was an absolutely awesome summer and an incredible winter. And the Arctic Arctic's summer has been absolutely intense. We've lost more ice in the summer of 2011 than we ever have in history. The Beaufort Sea and the Northwest Passage are both wide open right now for the first time in recorded history.
Woodley, this planet goes through cycles. I mean, there's no doubt. We've had things happen before and they'll happen again. But I can't recall such a time period where so many major climactic disasters occurred so close together, almost like it's one after another. Have you?
Well, the history of Earth's climate, first of all, obviously, it goes back a long way. And there are many instances in the past of extraordinary climate change. You know, when Art and I came out with Superstorm, the idea of sudden climate change, which had been part of science for years, suddenly became unpopular because we were saying it happened. And we went on the Today Show. Of course, Matt Lauer laughed at us, et cetera. But, you know, what does he know? he's been wrong about for so many things for so long, I'd spend the whole night listening. In any case, this is something that the way climate change happens on planet Earth is this. The disruptions happen over a period of time in a slowly escalating kind of vortex, and then suddenly there's a snapback to a completely different climate. And this is where we are right now at the beginnings of one of those periods where it snaps from one climate to another. How suddenly it will happen this time, nobody knows. But at the beginning of the Little Ice Age in Europe, back in the 1350s, this Europe in that time was a very prosperous area. It was not generally cold, even as far north as Paris and London, and even farther north. People were living in brick structures. They were lightly dressed. They didn't have much wool. They used a lot of cotton. They ate a great deal of meat because there was plenty of pasturage. And suddenly, in the course of a single year, it all changed. And there was a huge dieback of the human population. The human population became generally weaker and generally sicker. The Black Death came along because of that. And it was just a horrendous period of adjustment where ultimately half the population of the planet probably perished. And then slow, steady recovery began, and also over the next 200 or 300 years, the weather came back to more or less what it is now, and nobody knows why this happened then.
How many more calamities, weather-wise, can we handle back to back to back before we are truly in a mess?
It just depends on what kind of calamity. The fact of the matter is, we're going to have, like, for example, this fall, it's possible that we could have another period of very unsettled weather across the mid-continent of the United States.
Right.
I mean, it happens conceivably every spring and every fall. It could be particularly intense this fall because the area has been pretty hot, and it looks as if there are going to be some quite strong masses of polar air coming down across the same way as happened in the spring. Now, something happened in the polar region this past winter that you remember Snowmageddon. I mean, we're talking about heat now, but I think anyone who looks back on last winter can remember what the winter was like. You talk about harsh. I mean, it was a hard winter in this country. In fact, all over the whole northern hemisphere.
Sure was.
And they had, indeed, just now, they've had a tremendously harsh winter in the southern hemisphere. They had some of the coldest temperatures ever recorded in Argentina a couple of months ago. It's their winter now. In any case, what happened was normally a low-pressure area settles in over the Arctic in the winter. And this pushes cold air down into the central part of the continent. But the moisture in that air makes it less cold. However, this time, the polar vortex was a high-pressure system, and it even went counterclockwise a couple of times, and so you had these bizarre storms coming out seemingly in the wrong direction, and you had storms colliding over the central United States, which happened. You had mountains of snow, and you had very, very disruptive situation.
Do you think it's manipulation, Whitley? Are they playing around?
I don't think so. People are always saying, well, it's HARP. But I have a tremendous problem with that. And let me explain you what it is.
All right.
In order to, if you You can set a forest fire with a single match. And the reason is, when you set a leaf on fire, some of the cells in that leaf will burn, and then the fire will extend to other cells and other cells and other cells, and it just keeps burning until finally the whole tree and then eventually the entire forest is on fire. That's not how the atmosphere works. In order for there to be energy moving through the atmosphere, you have to have a source that's continuous. In other words, visualize that same situation, only if the match goes out, the whole fire stops.
Instantly.
Instantly. That's what happens with air. Air doesn't transmit energy like that. It's not it because it's chemically impossible for it to do that. So the result is, even if HARP heats a small part of the atmosphere, there's no domino effect. So I can see how they could change atmospheric conditions over a small area. And
maybe a city.
Maybe a city, but then where is the instrument that is, it's a big array of antennas. You have to, they could change it over a HARP installation conceivably for a while.
They'd have to do it like a pool bank shot, wouldn't they?
Well, yeah, but how? Where? How do you move the infrared energy like
that? And what does it bounce off of?
Well,
I don't know.
There isn't any place for it to bounce off. It's not going to bounce off of the ionosphere because it's not radio waves. So I don't personally think it's possible. However, our governments these days are so secretive, who knows what they may or may not be able to do. But the idea that they're sitting there screwing up the weather just to be, mean? I mean, I don't know what their motive would be. Maybe to screw up the weather in another country. I can see an enemy country.
Oh,
I can
sure.
certainly see that. But not in our own country.
No, but let's create the drought in Texas or the problem in China, maybe.
Well, would Obama go after Perry by creating a drought in Texas? I hope
you
not.
Never know.
Now, that drought in Texas, George, if that does not break, next spring there is going to be a major problem in Texas because the water systems are going to begin to fail all over the state. Already some smaller ones have failed and are failing. But that drought has to break this winter.
It's got to break in a big way.
In a big way, yeah, because the little bits of rain they've had recently are not a drought breaker at all. I lived through the drought in Texas in the 1950s. I remember what it was like. And, boy, I mean, in those days, of course, we didn't have nearly the kind of water infrastructure they have now. But I remember our well in our country house went dry, and, we had to truck water in up there, and it was rough. And this drought has not been as long, but it's been much, much drier than it ever was at any time during the whole 7 years in the 1950s drought.
Whitley, we're going to come back with you in just a moment. We're going to talk a little bit about Revelation. I want to get your take on Comet Elenin and Nibiru as well. By the way, those of you friends of the Institute of the Noetic Sciences in New York on October 22 and 23, on the 22nd, Whitley will talk about his new book, Solving the Communion Enigma, which we'll talk about next hour, to be published in January. And then on the following day, October 23rd, Ann Strieber will read some of these actual contact accounts that Whitley was talking about, and they are very different. You can get information on that event by going to Whitley's website at unknowncountry.com. We'll be back. Well, for you Coast Insiders, Tuesday, we're going to have our chat with Brad Steiger. That's right. Some of his topics, werewolves, aliens, outworldly creatures. So make sure you're part of that. It'll start at 8 p.m. Pacific time for Coast Insiders. Whitley, do you look at, the book of Revelation and tie that into things very often?
No, I don't do that very often, but I have done it recently. I have not been a believer in the 2012 calendar stuff, simply because I can't figure out how the ancient Mayan civilization, who hadn't the faintest idea of what, couldn't have had the faintest idea of what's going on now, could ever possibly have made a prediction for this era that landed on a specific year and made sense. One day I was reading the book of Revelation, And I came across, I was reading along, and I came across Revelations 20:12, which is Revelation chapter 20, verse 12, happens to be the verse of the last judgment. And I was shocked, frankly, and I thought, my goodness, it can't be true.
Did you stumble across that, or did you go looking for that?
I wasn't looking for anything.
Okay.
I was probably doing some research in it. For my guess is I was looking for a quotation for the frontispiece of a book I was working on. I think it might have been Hybrids when I found this, and it just shocked me to my core. And I thought, oh my! If you don't remember it, it is. And I saw the dead, great and small, standing before the throne, and books were opened. Then another book was opened, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged by what was written in the books, according to what they had done. That is Revelations 20:12. And, you know, I have to admit, since then, it's been 2 or 3 years, I've been sort of watching, and I see a continuous increase in natural disasters and upheavals and et cetera and so forth. And I have to ask myself, could it be true? And there's also a continuously increasing amount of UFO activity that we'll talk about in more detail later. And George, I just don't know the answer. I have to say, if December the 21st, 2012 comes and goes with no big deal, nothing in particular happening, I'm not going to be surprised.
No, nor would I. Nor would I. I actually expect things just to be very calm that night. That's a December 21st. It'll be a Friday night, so we'll be on the air that night, Whitley.
Right.
And we'll see what happens. You know, I don't think the clock's going to tick, and then, you know, something will. But at the same time, who knows? I mean, what if the sun disrupts a massive X-flare right around that time period or something?
Well, yeah, exactly. And the sun has been. Now, interestingly enough, the sun is possibly going to save our necks in terms of climate change, because it's supposed to go into a period of near hibernation in about 10 years, just when the climate situation is going to be spinning completely out of control. And if that happens, it might be that we won't be in so much trouble, and let's hope it does. But right now, it looks like we're having a very active solar max. After a long period of waiting, and the solar max is 2 years late, and so it's right now, and in 2012, the solar max will be at its height. So, yeah, something could happen.
It sure does. I don't think anybody's ever tied in Revelation with that 20:12 verse, chapter and verse, with the Mayan calendar. I think that's fantastic that you saw that.
Well, I didn't, you know, it sort of jumped out at me. In some ways, I wish I hadn't seen it, because it has kind of creeped me out, I have to
admit. It is eerie, that is.
Yeah.
How did they know these things, Whitley? Let's assume Revelation is true. Those will say it's the Word of God. But beyond that, how do they know these things?
Well, I don't know. With regard to the book of Revelation, they thought at the time that it was going to happen then.
I think every civilization has thought it would happen.
Yeah. Well, they weren't entirely wrong in ancient Rome, because while the world didn't end, their world as they knew it did.
It sure did.
A couple of hundred years. And then in the 10th century, of course, people thought it was going to be the end of the world. They gave all their property to the church and so forth, and then the world didn't end, and they were upset and wanted their castles and such back and didn't get them. Then in the year 2000, remember the Y2K deal was a big thing. I never thought it would amount to much, because I saw that, you know, the problem had been discovered, and in 1996, I think, And by 2000, it had mostly been fixed. But, I mean, there were people who were ready for the end of the world that night.
Running around with their heads, you know, the sky is falling.
The sky is falling. But the thing about the sky is it never does quite fall, or if it does fall, it doesn't fall in the way we expect. And so expecting the unexpected is probably the safest thing we could do.
Woodley, we've got David Sirita on tomorrow for a little bit, talking about an asteroid that he says will come to about 27,000 miles from the planet. That's pretty darn close. Have you looked at this Comet Elenine situation where I think sometime in October it's supposed to be closer than it's ever been to this planet?
We will have, on October the 28th, the chance to test whether or not the internet rumor mill has...
any teeth.
And also, September the 26th, by the way, is another day that's supposed to be that it's going to happen.
Which is right now.
Right now. And you notice, I mean, my house has just collapsed. I guess the station's still up, but it won't be for long.
Yeah, thanks.
It's between 3 and 5 miles wide. It's a piece of space debris made up of ice. It has a rocky core. As it approaches the sun, it's going to probably generate a small tail, but it's an insignificant comet. It's not even a very important comet, and there is no reason to think that I can see that it will do anything unusual to this planet. I think it'll pass without it even being visible from Earth, frankly. It's certainly not a brown dwarf star.
No.
It isn't the planet Nibiru, et cetera, and so forth. I just can't imagine that why it would be that it captured people's imaginations.
Isn't it decomposing at the same time?
Sure, yeah, they all are. All comets who come into the inner solar system are decomposing. And that's why they have tails.
You know, when you talked about what's going on climatically around this planet, isn't the solar system itself heating up?
That's possible, but it's not clear that that's actually happening. There is some evidence of structures in the atmospheres of Jupiter and Saturn that means something is happening there. Whether it's caused by heating or not, we don't know. There's been some evidence a couple of Martian summers ago, that Mars was unusually warm, but the last couple of Martian summers have been quite normal. Northern Hemisphere winters in Mars have been quite normal. So it's just that's an open question. It's not clear that the solar system is heating up. Something happened back about 13,000 years ago. There were a lot of changes, and there was a fascinating book written by some NASA scientists called The Cycle of Cosmic Catastrophe, which was roundly criticized, but then subsequently it does appear that they weren't wrong, that they were quite right, that apparently Earth and the Sun, back 30,000 years ago, a supernova took place somewhere nearby, and the light from that supernova hit Earth, and it caused extinctions of large animals in a sort of strip across southern Africa and Australia, and that's when all the big marsupial wolves and things in Australia were killed, because these were all animals who were always outdoors. The little animals went inside and hid, and the human beings did the same thing.
They were the smart ones.
Caves and hid, yeah, because obviously something was not right, and they survived. But then, 13,000 years ago, there's two things that come out of a supernova. First is a blast of radiation, basically gamma rays, will come out of it. And then second thing to come, and much more slowly, is debris that is formed in the explosion of the star. This came into our solar system, these authors thought, about 13,000 years ago. And at that time, we had the very dickens of an upheaval on this planet. That's when the Ice Age ended. It's when the entire Clovis culture was wiped out. And the scale of it, George, was extraordinary. There's a thing in a subsurface structure in the United States and in Canada, all over the, almost everywhere, from Illinois all the way down into the south and across into New Mexico, called the Black Mat, which you dig down, you find this anywhere from 6 inches to 10 or 12 feet below the surface, depending on where you are. This mat is dead algae. You talk about floods. The continent, as that ice melted so quickly, the entire continent was covered with water. Now, what did that? That's not a normal situation. We do know that something hit in the above the area where the Great Lakes are that instantaneously vaporized an area of the Laurentian ice sheet the size of Rhode Island in literally under a second.
Into steam. Instantly.
Into steam. And the Clovis culture, which created a certain type of arrowhead, those arrowheads are found only under the Black Mat. Then there's about a 1,000-year period above the Black Mat where there's nothing found. Then new arrowheads of a new type of people come and begin to appear, because these people were coming from somewhere, the south, the north. I don't think anyone is really sure anymore. But in any case, these men think that this material from this solar explosion hit the Earth and also caused a dramatic drop in temperatures, because the solar system was filled with, in effect, with a gas cloud from this supernova. Now, it could be that we're entering another such cloud, and the initial effects of such a thing would be generalized heating from friction as we begin to move through it. Then later, if it gets thicker, that will change to a process of cooling as it impedes the amount of solar energy reaching the planets. But we don't know for sure if that's happening or not.
What you've looked at, and we're going to get into solving the communion enigma at the top of the hour, but with UFO secrecy all over the place, you have looked at the possibility of some kind of upheaval with UFO secrecy. What is that?
Well, I think, and I have on my journal on Unknown Country right now, the journal entry is called What If They Land? And basically, I've thought, and I can't say that I was ever told this or anything, but I've had the feeling that if things get completely out of control here, if we begin to lose it, I mean, not as a, obviously, I mean, we went through World War II and they didn't land, and I don't think that they're going to land if we have another big war either. But if the environment begins to decline and it looks like maybe the human species will become extinct, things might change. And so I think that my interest in environmental situation and my interest in what would happen if the visitors got really openly close to us are kind of connected. Because I think that if there's a megadeth taking place on this planet, if billions of people should be, God forbid, dying, it might be that there are going to be fundamental changes in the experience of being here. And in that context, we would find out a couple of things. First of all, there may be aliens involved in what's happening to us, but that's only a part of it and not necessarily the largest part. And second, that we may be engaged in a kind of a birth experience In other words, it may be that mankind is, we have come to the end of a period. Earth is a kind of womb, and the baby that is mankind is now so big that it can no longer live in that womb. And we're going to born out into a totally new kind of life, the nature of which we can now hardly even begin to conceive.
And I've always wondered if we were the genetic seed of some experiment as well. As the old Zechariah Sitchin would think in his theories, I've always wondered if ETs just merely came down and tested things here, Whitley.
Well, you know, if we were able to travel between the stars, and, you know, I used to have a lot of trouble with that. I've never been convinced that the ET answer was the answer to what's going on. And part of the reason for that is I was always troubled by the idea of how could you travel all of these distances, because in terms of the size of the universe, the speed of light is slow. It's real slow. I mean, it sounds incredible to say that, but it's terribly slow.
Now we have neutrinos that may even go faster than light.
That has made me think twice.
Yeah.
Because if we do indeed find that movement faster than light is happening, not just possible, but happening, then all bets are off.
It changes everything.
It does change everything, yeah, because if that kind of movement is possible, first of all, that means it's also movement into the future. Because if you go faster than light, you necessarily move into the future.
That's right. That is right. That is going to just change the physics books, isn't it?
If it's true. Now, they're going to be testing it at Fermilab shortly. And nobody I've talked to in physics, and I know a few physicists pretty well, thinks it could be that it's true.
They think it was just some anomaly, some fluke?
Well, not exactly, because the experiments are very well done. But they think somehow or another something deceptive happened. What it was is not clear.
Deceptive, like intentional?
No, not intentional. Something seemed like other than what it was.
Ah.
And frankly, I don't agree. I think I've read parts of the experimental protocol, and they really worked on this.
They sure did. Whitley, stay with us. We're at the top of the hour, and we're going to come back in a moment and talk about Whitley's new work that'll be out in January, Solving the Communion Enigma, What is to Come. Stand by. Whitley Strieber next with me on Coast to Coast AM.